guys. Welcome back to H-Town Wheelhouse Podcast. It is July 11th, Thursday. The Astros kick off their second half of the season tonight against their in-division rivals, Arlington Rangers. Yes, that's right. I said the Arlington Rangers. Here in our next few segments, we're going to be joined by Gerald Sanchez. He is the University of Houston women's play-by-play announcer, as well does some University of Houston baseball, and most recently broadcasted from the National High School Baseball Championship hosted at Rice University. He's a local Houston product. He's been in broadcasting for over a decade, and he has an affinity for Houston Astros baseball. So when we come back, we'll be talking with Gerald Sanchez. Stay tuned. A veteran in the broadcasting booth, Gerald Sanchez. He is a Houston, well, not a Houston native, but he has found his home and his heart in Houston, originally from Victoria. He is currently the voice of U of H women's basketball and, as well, broadcasts the U of H men's baseball teams. Most recently, he had the honor of being the broadcaster for the National High School Baseball National Championship at Rice University. Hey, Gerald, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Hey, Gerald, why don't you just kind of give the audience your background briefly, like how you got into broadcasting and just kind of what brought you here to Houston. And then from there, after you do that, I want to talk about your favorite Astros memory growing up. But let's start out. Give us a little biopic of you and your career.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I like you said, I'm from Victoria, born and raised, and went to school, high school there at the private Catholic high school, St. Joseph, which is the alma mater also of former Astro Doug Drabek. So I just grew up with the game of baseball. My father, from a very early age, taught me the game. He was my little. And growing up, we didn't have HSE in Victoria all the time. It was come and go. Sometimes you had to subscribe to it. Sometimes it was for free. My parents didn't subscribe to it. So I grew up a lot listening to baseball on radio. I listened to Gene Elston and then Milo Hamilton with Larry Durker and that era of Astros baseball, and just grew up listening and just being a very passionate sports fan, not only of the Astros, but of the Rockets. And always on Sundays, my dad would go to Mass in the morning and take 59 and go to the Astrodome, to the House of Pain, and watch the Houston Oilers during football season. So it was a lot of sports in my youth and my formative years growing up that gave me the opportunity to, well, first of all, have a passion for it. And second of all, ever since I was, I would say about 5 or 6 years old, I knew I wanted to talk on television or talk on the radio about baseball. And so ever since then, I always just used to practice on a little tape recorder. And then the day that I turned 16 years old, I started working at a radio station. I learned as much as I could about the broadcast industry before I went to college. And so when I went to college here at UH, I knew a little bit about broadcasting already, and then went back to Victoria, worked full time, and then in 2001 started working at the Texas Sports Radio Network. Nice. Doing high school football, and then I learned about the business aspect of it, and you know, with sales and marketing and sponsorships and so forth. So I try to learn as much as I could about not only the talent and production end of it, but also the business end of the industry. And well, as they say, next week on July the 18th is 27 years for me.
Oh, wow.
in the broadcasting industry.
That's impressive. Now for our audience, if the audience is younger than you and I, because you and I, we discussed the other day, are about the same age, HSE was the, I don't know if it's Home Sports Entertainment or Houston Sports Entertainment. I can't remember what the initials.
It was
it Home Sports?
Home Sports Entertainment. Yeah. And I mean,
You're right. I mean, even being in the Houston market, if you didn't have a cable subscription, you didn't get it. And so I can imagine being in Victoria, like you had said, you might be able to catch around 18 games because of if they played the Braves on TBS, or even, I remember the WGN baseball games. To watch baseball, sometimes I would have to watch Cubs baseball. I have several friends that actually grew up Cubs fans because that's all they got to see on TV. And so, things have changed today. It's AT&T. They went through the Root Sports phase. It was Fox Sports Southwestern for a while. And so there's really been a lot of turnover as to when you and I were growing up, it was basically one network carried it. And
Well, here's an interesting thing about home sports entertainment. It was the first of its kind across America. It was the first regional cable sports network.
I did not
And
know
I
that.
was fortunate enough to work with executive producer Mike Anastasio with the high school baseball championships that you had just mentioned that were recently over at Rice. And they put those on ESPN Plus. And
Right.
I, you know, Mike was one of the ground on the ground up of that home sports entertainment back in 1983. That's when it debuted. The first event that they broadcast was the Rockets versus the Celtics, January of 83 from the Summit. And
Wow.
Bill Worrell, broadcast veteran that
Yes.
he has been he was on that start along with Greg Lucas and a lot of great talent and visionaries. And it just grew, and other people saw that, hey, there's a cable sports market working in Houston. Well, let's set up ours in Denver, and let's set up ours in New
Oh
York,
yeah,
and
because
well,
they have the Yes Network up there. So I guess you
but
could
the but
say.
HSE was the first of
Oh,
its
okay.
kind. It morphed into Fox Sports Southwest, and then now the Astros are on the new network, AT&T.
Now, that's interesting. So now, Houston's claim to fame is, Mission Control, the Astrodome. I didn't know. Now we're also, in my mind, home of the Regional Sports Network. So I guess the Yankees fans and other people can thank us for that.
Yes,
That's
it's right.
I had
It's
no
it
idea.
started here in
That
Houston.
is awesome.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
hey, tell me, when you and I were discussing off the air just on the phone, and as we were getting to know each other, you had mentioned, I could tell by your knowledge, like you were when we were talking about past playoff series, like you were recalling like at bats in like third and fourth innings, and I was sitting there going, wait, I don't remember that. I feel like a really bad Astros fan. But I was like, because I always get told by a lot of people, you know so much about baseball. And I'm like, yeah, I do, but trust me, there's others out there that know way more than me. What do you think? Because I know you've probably seen thousands of plays or thousands of scenarios, but if you were to cherry pick one, take one memory that you could say this was the one that I think takes the cake of all the memories I had of being at the Astrodome. What is like your favorite Astros memory that you can recall growing up? And I know that might be
Growing up,
hard. That might be hard because I'm sure there's a lot of them, but if you had is like you have to pick this one.
okay. Well, that's easy. The growing
Okay.
up part, in my formative years as a young boy in Victoria, favorite moment for the Astro fans was Game 6 in the 14th inning of the '86 Championship Series when Billy Hatcher hits the dramatic game tying home run off the
Yes.
left field foul pole to tie the game at four. And that was always my favorite moment, my favorite memory. And for many years, for many Astros fans, that was the biggest home run for many years in Astros playoff history, albeit it came in a loss.
Well, yeah, but
But that's how little success that we had in postseason. We got there plenty of times, but the dramatic moments didn't happen as often. But there was the 86, the home run by Billy Hatcher. For me, it's got to be my favorite moment.
yeah, I mean that, for back then, if you compare it now, like, our moment is really Marwin Gonzalez's home run, to to tie the game in LA, off of, was it, off of,
Kenley
yes,
Jansen.
Kenley Jansen. I almost said another major leaguer. And a lot of people are saying ever since he gave up that home run, it kind of broke him, kind of put like a Brad Lidge type of curse on him. He's kind of been back and forth. But yeah, I mean, that
Well,
for years. And I mean, now I remember watching that game on TV and just, I remember jumping up and down and like, yeah, we're gonna win. And I saw an interview with some of the Mets from that team, and they said they were afraid to win, to lose that game because they knew they had to face Mike Scott the next game.
it was their game seven.
Yeah.
And you're right. Gary Carter and Daryl Strawberry have both gone on record saying if we would have played game seven, we would have lost
Yeah, because
because Mike Scott was so far in their heads. And he was so dominant, not only to just, to the other National League, the Mets had, they won 108 games and they were just from start to finish. That was a really good baseball team, a juggernaut. Well, Scott, just he was, pitching is just it's such a unique, interesting part of the game of baseball where the guy on the mound dominates. He can dominate everything, and you can have an average team, but if he's you've got an ace pitcher, he can give even the best of the hitting teams of the hard time.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, with that, and I remember the split finger fastball. I remember as a kid growing up, I remember my dad came home and I had tape around my two, my index finger and my middle finger, and I had a baseball in between those two fingers, and I had this, like, I don't know if it's masking tape or something. He goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm trying to get my fingers to split around the baseball because I want to throw a split finger fastball." And my dad said, "You're going to tear the skin in between your fingers there. That's not doesn't look very comfortable in my hand." I don't know if my hand was turning purple at the time. I was losing circulation, but I was just trying to. I wanted to be Mike Scott when I was 10 and 11 years old. So I mean, he was a. I mean, for us growing up, he was an icon. And I remember getting to see him pitch. I never saw him pitch a playoff game, but getting to see him and Ryan and Niekro and Durker and all these guys pitch growing up. Even Dave Smith. Dave Smith doesn't get talked a lot about. He was excellent for the Astros, for all those
Yeah,
years.
he was. Dave Smith threw a variation of the split finger, which was the fork bowl.
Yes,
And I don't know if you
yes,
recall that or
yes,
not,
yes, I
but
do.
Smitty, as he was known, was for many years the all-time Astros save leader. He in the '86 season. Speaking of 1986, I keep going back to that because it
No,
was
that.
just that's really the year that I fell in love with baseball. Smith broke Fred Gladding's record, which was held in 1969 for the franchise of 27 saves.
Wow.
Smitty broke that with 33 saves in the '86 season. So Dave Smith was, and remember back then, not every team had a stopper or a closer.
Right, yeah,
It
that
was the
wasn't the.
teams managed bullpens differently back then, and the Astros had one. They had Dave Smith, and he was really good for a long time. He played 11 seasons in Houston, played on the three playoff teams, 80, 81, and 86. And yeah, you go back and you talk to any of those guys, they always have good things to say about Dave Smith. Cool as a cucumber, as Milo Hamilton used to call him.
Well, it's funny. The only other Smith I recall that was a closer was Lee Smith, for the Cubs. I mean, you're right. There weren't, you don't have this list of relief pitchers. And I discussed that the other day, with a guy, Chris Castanella, who's on Twitter. He comments on Tigers baseball games. He's got a huge following. And, we were talking about how pitching has become more of a it has become a real chess match because if a team is very weak in the middle relieving, I mean they don't really stand a chance at the end of the 9 innings because if you can get a guy that only goes 4 or 5 innings and you bring in your middle relief, you can count on the other team getting 3 or 4 runs every time. And so it makes it more, I think it makes it tricky. I think managing baseball nowadays might be a little more difficult because of all the analytics I mean, would you say that's a fair assessment of the game of where it is, or do you think baseball's always just been baseball? You know what I'm saying?
I think at the core of it, baseball is still baseball,
Right.
but you also have so much no more data and information now at your fingertips as a manager and a coaching staff, general manager. And so there's more harmony, I think, between a general manager and a manager and you know, the organization, at least a good organization like the
Right.
Astros, to where they're all on the same page on how they want their players to perform and what they expect of them. And I think that analytics has helped the game, but you know what? At the end of the day, still baseball is baseball.
It's yeah,
And
it's still
you can
right.
still use percentages and you can use theories and everything that goes into the numbers. You can make baseball as much as you want to as a science, but you think about it. 60 foot 6 inches hitting a fastball that is coming at you, and or you know, the ball is moving, and two sphere objects, a baseball sphere and a bat barrel, a sphere, hitting two of those together, you
It
know,
doesn't make
that's
sense. I mean, you know.
no, it doesn't. But I'm a big fan of the analytics. I like how you know, they use the information to better perform on the field, the shift and so forth. You see it a lot. So, and you know, on the flip side of that, okay, hitters have to make the adjustments. I loved it when local product Matt Carpenter, who played his high school ball at Elkins, his father was a Texas High School Baseball Hall of Fame coach, Rick Carpenter. Matt was playing with the Cardinals earlier this year. He bunted down the third base line for a double because the shift had him
Oh yeah.
so far on the right
I remember
side.
seeing that
And
and he made it.
Matty C. A little bunt down the left side, and it was a double. And it was a thing of beauty because it says, you know, it kind of just says, well, you know, shift this.
Well, I love because obviously we're in the if you go to Twitter, they have the barreled ball Twitter account where like every home run that's hit. They have the launch angle and all that percentage and all that stuff. And, you know, last year when Bregman had his two insane plays, one the pop-up that Eric Hosmer missed, and then the little dribbler he hit where Lucroy misses the tag on him. They end up scoring on that and winning that game. Both of those games, the AT&T guys were on top of it. And they did catch probability, and they also did like I think they did launch angle and exit velocity on those dribblers. And I to me that was top. That was a great catch by that broadcast team because everybody's so focused on, well, it's a 28 degree launch angle and it was exit velocity of 119 off the bat. You know, I think it was like 22 mile an hours off the bat. The like the hit probability was like 2%, you know, and so it's fun to do those kinds of things with the numbers. Hey, I wanted to ask you about the topic that I think everybody's talking about right now, the Jake Mariznick suspension. And what I find peculiar about the suspension is not the fact that they suspended him. I assumed they would because of the injury sustained by LaCroix. But the explanation from Joe Torre just has me completely dumbfounded, where he basically says Jake didn't do anything wrong, but because we have this rule, we feel like we need to suspend him. And the second part of the rule that he quotes, it's like 6.01 or something. The second part of the rule says that the catcher is not allowed to block the plate if they're not in possession of the ball. Number one, do you think the Astros will try to appeal it? And two, do you think baseball got this like really, really wrong?
Well, if I remember reading what I read on MLB.com, that Torre explained that it's n not that he did anything wrong, it's that Mariznick didn't have the intention of hurting. If did I read that right?
I read that. Yeah, like he didn't have the intention of hurting him, but I don't know. To me, it seemed very, there was a lot of ambiguity. There was a lot, it was like he wasn't wrong, but we're suspending him because there's this
Yeah,
rule.
and do you know, Brett, do you feel that he is making this, you know, Tory is making this as an example to say, look, we're not going to tolerate this,
And
you know? And you think about it,
right.
you think about it, the in baseball, you don't see as many collisions at home plate anymore because of the rule change.
Exactly. That's true. Yeah, I that makes sense. There's some pretty comedic takes by fans and stuff. I've talked to you about my Stros 411 page, and our moniker is all or our motto is always positive, always Astros. And so when we posted this story today, I had to say, okay, look, let's talk about this, and let's have a discussion, but let's try to keep the tempers and the angers and the vulgarities out of it. And one person said, I'm fine with the suspension and the fine as long as we don't allow Joe Torre, Joe West, or Joe Buck back to Minute Maid Park. So there's this, like, the fans have really, their Astros colored glasses have come out, and I just, it, I guess it makes sense to maybe make a statement and make an example, like, okay, we're not going to tolerate this. But at the same time, to me, there's no acknowledgement by the league, or that I've seen, and maybe I've missed it, that Jake's first step was to the right, and then he moved to the left. Lucroy moved after he moved, and when Jake goes into him, he almost goes into him like a defensive hit. Like, there's a difference from when Pete Rose takes out the catcher. You know what he's doing. He's a heat-seeking missile. He's going to blow up that catcher. Jake, the way he goes into him, he was trying to slide, but I think he was either trying to go around, and it was like he was trying to avoid that contact. I don't know. Question, do you think if Lucroy has his mask on and doesn't get the broken nose and the blood's not shed, do you think they still suspend Jake?
You know, that's a very good question. I would say no, because if you know, if it's just a play, a bang bang play at the plate, I think that well, there's you know, if Lucroy holds on to the ball and he is out, and you know, Lucroy rolls the ball back to the mound, heads back to the dugout, and Mriznik, you know, tosses the helmet and waits for his teammate to pick him up with the equipment to head back to center field. I don't think that there's any beef about it. But because there was the injury, because this happened, it's, you know, it's the same thing when the little girl down the third baseline at Minute Maid Park was injured. You know, no one was saying anything about nets before, and there have been many foul balls down, you know, screaming down the lines. But when this happened, it brings, you know, people to say, hey, we need to do something about it. We might want to put nets up, or you know, how fans are, right? And so I don't think that there's a discussion about if he holds on to the ball and doesn't have the broken nose and isn't out for a little while, I don't think there's any discussion about it. It's just a play at the plate.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I just think, too, and you may be able to speak to this because you're a longtime Houston Astros fan. A lot of us who, I didn't actually grow up in Houston. I grew up around Houston, but I still call myself a Houstonian, right? But I guess we always feel like we get the short end of the stick. Like, I remember in the playoffs when the league told Minute Maid that they had to open the stadium. And I remember being upset because I was at the game five NLCS when Albert Pujols launched the famous home run that quote unquote has never landed. I was there when the stadium was closed and it was loud, and then we get to the World Series and they're like, you must open the stadium. We're like, we want to keep it closed. There's just been so many things over the years where I think Houston fans have a natural propensity to react in an adverse way, because I don't believe the Houston community that we're victims. I mean, you look at Harvey and our response to Harvey, and we're very much doers, and we're self-reliant. But man, when it comes to sports, I think we always feel like we get that short end of the stick. Am I
You know, you, yeah, I hear that a lot too about the short end of a stick, about how, New York based, New York biased media, East Coast biased
Right.
media. You hear, well, the Astros, Major League Baseball's trying to shorten the Astros and so
Right.
forth. And, I really, you think about it, what benefit does Major League Baseball have to, gain by short ending the
No,
Astros?
exactly. And
They really don't. And you mentioned Joe Buck, and it's funny because you see it on Twitter, you hear a lot of chatter on the Facebook pages of
right.
Astros fan pages and so forth, and they say, oh, Joe Buck's for the other team, Joe Buck's for the Dodgers in the World Series. And it's funny because you go to the Dodgers page and you talk to Dodgers fans, and they think that Joe Buck and John Smoltz were for the Astros. And it not
That's
only
funny.
happens, it not only, it really is. And it not only happens with us. You talk to San Antonio Spurs fans, they think they get the short end of the
Okay.
stick from the NBA.
Right.
And the Spurs have been very
Oh,
successful
yeah.
in the last 20 something years. And they feel that it's, everybody's for New York and
Right.
or the Lakers and the West Coast and everything. And so you go anywhere, you look at any fan pages, even Red Sox fans think that Brian Anderson on TBS was for the Astros last series.
Right.
And it's comical, it's funny, it's how you perceive it. It's how you fans want to listen and how they want to perceive it. But
Right.
looking at it from a straight on, I really don't think Major League Baseball is trying to do anything with the Astros.
No, and I don't think either. I just know that I think that is kind of, I think that kind of
It's the
explains,
perception,
yeah.
sure.
And I was told in my one or two psychology classes and sociology classes that I did take in college that, perception is reality. And so, communication is not so much when you say something, but it's how it's perceived. So, like, you could say something to five different people, and you could literally get five different interpretations of the same exact phrase,
Yep, absolutely.
I want to move on from there. I want to ask you, going into the second half, the Astros have, I guess, actually, at this point, they're 7.5 games up on the division, and it's the first time I saw today since the Braves did it 3 years in a row in the 90s of being up by 7 games or more at the All-Star break in their division. They've got the third best record they've had out of the last 3 seasons. Going into the second half of the season, do you think the Astros are going to get a big arm or a mid-level arm? And also, do you think we're going to see the Astros and the Yankees in the ALCS?
It's a good possibility. Obviously there's a lot that could happen between now and then. Injuries could happen. The Yankees could, Yankees could go through a down spiral and they might not be recover. As the way it looks right now on paper, yeah, I think that we'll have another American League Championship Series with the Astros and Yankees. If you ask me, that I think that's what's going to happen. Yes. Also, to answer your other question, I think that they will certainly try. Jeff Luhnow will certainly try to strike a deal to get an arm, because that's been a big question mark going in even into the season. When Dallas Keuchel didn't re-sign, well, who were you going to get? And Wade Miley has been a really nice pickup and a nice bargain and surprise for the Astros, but you still need somebody else, especially in a playoff series.
Right.
And I think that they're going to do their best to try to get an arm, whether it would be a Marcus Stroman with the Toronto Blue Jays or Madison Bumgarner of the San Francisco Giants. So they're going to certainly try. I think that the Astros will try everything that they can, just like they did in 2017. Do you
Right.
remember when the trade deadline came and went, and we all wanted Verlander here, but it didn't happen, and then you had people sh shooting their mouths off? Well, the Astros didn't, da 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 da.
Yeah, they don't
Well, guess
care.
what? They don't know the inner workings of what it all takes to get a deal done. It's not as easy as a lot of fans think.
No,
And
right.
so I just tell fans, be patient. They're trying. Believe me, they want to upgrade what they can. And also, how is it going to fit with the chemistry of this ball club? You think about our ball club right now as it's constructed. Everybody gets along really well
Everybody. I mean,
together. I mean, you think,
even the young guys.
I mean,
I mean,
yeah, everybody gets along. And that is something that is an intangible that is such to our benefit when it really counts the most. The camaraderie and the
right.
intangibles that pulling for one another, because there are a lot of teams that, it's very dysfunctional. They're good, they win, but it's dysfunctional, and it kind of is exposed in October.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And
I had read an article by Chandler Rome. He writes for the Houston Chronicle. He does an excellent job covering the Astros. I don't know if you've ever met Chandler or know of his writings, but he wrote about George Springer and his relationship with Michael Brantley. And he's talked about how Michael Brantley has meant so much to him this year. And for someone like George Springer, who can be a lightning rod, who's a fiery personality, who is, when I love watching him celebrate other people's home runs, because he acts like my 11 and 12 year olds act when someone on their team hits a home run. I mean, he still just has this enthusiasm for the game. For Brantley to come in and to be the presence he is just unreal. I've been looking at the different possibilities, and I really think the Astros can take someone that's a little under the radar. I really want them to go get Matt Boyd, but I'm afraid the asking price on the Tigers is too much because they're in like rebuild mode. But I think Zach Wheeler from the Mets is a real possibility. And if you can take a guy, I mean, look what we did with Morton. He was damaged goods when he came over. But if you get like a Zach Wheeler or someone like that in the clubhouse and they can fit in, then oh my gosh, I just think the Astros have enough defensively, they have enough offensively to they can power through any team in a 7-game series, especially you have to face Verlander twice, you have to face Cole, Miley's been on point, and you just add one other arm, mid-level or even mid-high level. I think the Astros have a very good chance of returning back to the World Series because of that. I was going to tell you this. It was 2 years ago in 2017. AJ Hinch had done something. I think I mentioned this on a podcast about a week ago. AJ Hinch had done something in a game where he had made a decision, and everybody was just ranting and raving about it. And I think the Astros had lost. And I just put on Twitter, I promise you, Astros Twitter, that AJ Hinch has done more studying and knows more about the decisions he's making than we do. And you know what? He's probably more concerned with a win or a loss or what happens in a game than we ever will be. It was something like that. And AJ Hinch liked my tweet. Like they were on the way to Oakland. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've arrived. Like I told my wife about it and she was like, oh, that's cool. Like she didn't get it. Like I was like, no, you don't understand. That's a big deal. Like this is a major league manager who's like, he's a genius. And like he liked my compliment of him. And of course, I haven't gotten a like from AJ since then, but that was my little 5 seconds of fame,
Yeah.
So hey, I want to ask you a few questions. I want to ask you some buy or sell questions.
Okay.
Ready?
Sure.
Okay. Buy or sell, Yordan Alvarez wins Rookie of the Year.
If he keeps producing, I would say sell. So to me, I would
Okay,
buy.
you'd buy.
I would say buy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Buy or sell, the Houston Astros sign a starting pitcher this year with the understanding that Gerrit Cole signs in the offseason.
I sell that.
You sell that? What part of that do you sell? Them getting an arm or them being able to retain Cole?
Retain Cole.
Okay. Now, do you think that's based on the price he's going to be demanding?
Yeah, I think he's gonna, he's, I mean, it's gonna be asking for a lot, and you've got a lot of people that you need to sign here in the future
Right.
that's coming up.
Okay.
So the one of the questions, well, I'd love for him to stay here.
Right.
But I don't know if, you know, I don't know if they are going to be able to have that type of a payroll.
Right, I hear you. Okay, buy or sell. Forrest Whitley becomes the number three or four starter in the Astros rotation in 2020.
Ooh, I would have to sell that. Based on what we have now, I would have to sell.
Okay. Buy or sell, the Astros hold on to Kyle Tucker and he gets called up in September. Or you can probably change the end of that, or I mean, do you think Kyle Tucker stays through the free agency period?
You mean the trade deadline?
Yes.
I would say he would be the piece that a lot of teams would want in this in the Astros arm asking race, so to say.
Right.
So I would say, you know what? I'd say bye. I'd say bye on that. I don't think the Astros want to give up on him.
Okay. So he's here. Okay. So buy or sell in 2021, you will have in this lineup Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Alex Bregman, all the key pieces, and you will have George Springer with a newly signed 5 or 6 year deal.
I'd buy that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I know a lot of Astros fans, such as myself, really want to see Springer stay. I thought he was going to be the odd man out. And I got one more buy or sell question for you. Buy or sell, Carlos Correa is traded before his contract is up in 2021.
I'd buy that too. I'd buy that too.
I mean, it's been such a mixed bag of goods. I mean, I really like what he gives you when he's 100%, I mean, he's a heck of an infielder. He's a great hitter. I've never seen him as a long-term lifetime Astro.
No, I agree with you there. Obviously the injury bug is a huge thing
Yes.
in his future, and I think that if you can't if you trade him while he still has some value before, he's a free agent and you can't get anything out of him.
Exactly. Well, good deal. Well, hey, Gerald, I appreciate this conversation, and I hope you have enjoyed it yourself as well. Like I said, I'm just trying to build our base. If you wouldn't mind sharing this with our listeners. Now, are there places that people can find you? Are you on social media at all? Are you on like Twitter?
I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is I don't use Twitter too much, but I still have it at Doctor Who 333. That's my
Nice.
Twitter handle
Okay.
at DRWHO 333. And I'm on Instagram, Gerald S. Sanchez.
Okay.
You can find me on Instagram. And then, of course, Gerald Sanchez, I'm on Facebook.
Okay, excellent. And how can people hear you when you do broadcast U of H, like women's basketball games, U of H baseball? Is there a place we can go online to listen, or is there a place on the radio dial?
Yeah, absolutely. UHCougars.com, and all they have to do is click on the page, for women's basketball or for baseball, and it'll have like a little link to listen. So UHCougars.com.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys. Again, this is H-Town Wheelhouse. I'm joined by Gerald Sanchez, voice of the Houston Cougars women's basketball and men's baseball teams, and Astros historic extraordinaire. This guy has a lot of years not only broadcasting, but backing our hometown Astros as well. We didn't really get to talk much, but he loves the Texans. He loves the local teams, the Rockets, and so definitely someone you want to check out. I'm sure if you see him at a game broadcasting, I'm sure he wouldn't mind saying hi. Gerald, thanks for joining us today. Let's talk again real soon in a few weeks as we see the playoff picture start to shape up? Would you want to do that and maybe talk about who the playoff pairings appear to be and what roadblocks stand in the way of the Houston Astros getting a second world championship in 3 seasons? Are you down for that?
I'd be delighted. Thank you very much. Absolutely.
All right. Hey, Gerald, thank you so much. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Y'all have a good one. This is H-Town Wheelhouse. I'm signing out. Bye.